All right, let's get started. My name is Katie Salivas. I am the host and producer of the Spilling Ink Show, which is a weekly podcast where I talk to authors and pretty much anybody in the publishing industry to find out what they do, how they do it, and why they do it. I'm also a published author of over 20 books in 5 different series. I have the Immortalis series, the Old Town Path, the Little Werewolf, the Chronicles of the Uprising, and my newest one is the Agents of Asset. And so I've been writing for as long as I can remember, and I've been publishing for about 10 years. So hopefully I can give you guys a little bit of information from all the trial and error learning that I've done over the years. How many of you guys are in the middle of writing a book right now? Okay, awesome. So we all know the secret to writing a book, right? The big, big secret. You gotta sit down, you gotta write the book. Nobody can write the book but you. And it seems like it's such an easy thing, you know, to sit down and write the book. There's a lot more that goes into it. Now, of course, being a writer, we always come up with reasons to not write, right? We listen to podcasts about writing. We go to seminars about writing because education's important, right? This is good, but it's not writing. We go to writing conferences, we listen to our podcasts, we dream about our stories, we talk to other people about our stories, we talk to our cats about our stories. I don't know about you, but my cat hates every story idea that I give him. My dog loves them though, so I'm with her. But none of these things will actually write your book. The big secret to the whole sit down and write is the dedication. You actually have to put the time in the chair, sitting down, writing your story, and it takes a long time to do it. Some people can write fast, some people can write slow. It doesn't matter what speed you write at. It matters whether or not you're putting your butt in the chair and actually writing your story. So let's talk about writing the story. Before we actually go into writing a story, we should know what kind of writer we are. Now, are you guys familiar with pantsers and plotters as a term? All right, we're gonna explain that. Both of these are okay, by the way. You don't have to fit into any one style. But there are 2 distinct styles of writing, and knowing which one suits you best will actually help you on your journey. So let's talk about plotters first. Plotters are the ones who plot out the story ahead of time. Those are the ones who sit down, they do character Bibles ahead of time, they do the world building ahead of time, and they map out their story from beginning to end before they sit down and actually write chapter 1 through whatever. Now, no writing style is perfect. There's going to be pros and cons on either side. We're going to talk about those. One of the benefits of being a plotter is you kind of know ahead of time what's going on, so you don't run into that wall of writer's block. A lot of times when you run into writer's block and you can't figure out how to get beyond the problem, that can actually stop the writing process in its tracks, and you don't know where to go from there, and your book never gets written. Plotting ahead of time stops that from happening. You know all of the twists and turns in your story before you sit down and write that chapter, which can be very beneficial. It also means you know the exciting points ahead of time. It can kind of get you excited about writing those exciting points. It makes you write faster. Knowing ahead of time where your story's going, you have less of that thought process of ruining it today, or staring at that blinking cursor, wondering, what am I going to put on the page? How am I going to fill this blank space? You already know. And so you can write a lot faster knowing ahead of time, following your outline. On the flip side, sometimes knowing makes it boring, especially if you have to write the boring chapters. You know, we talk about saggy middle syndrome in a lot of novels. Well, sometimes a lot of those info dump heavy chapters that we write can be pretty boring, and we don't want to write them. Because we want to skip ahead of the exciting stuff, but you have to write all of it. Dedication is the key element in writing your story, so you have to write the good and the bad, the boring and the exciting. Also, if you are writing an outline and you are sticking to that outline hard fast, sometimes your story wants to go off book and you feel like you are trapped in the outline and you can't go beyond it. I can tell you right now, even if you outline ahead of time and you get to a point in your story where you don't think it's running the way it should, go off book. Allow yourself to go beyond that outline. Don't be a slave to it, because you'll find your story goes into a direction that you weren't able to see, and sometimes is better for the story overall. Now, for the pantsers who write by the seat of their pants, that's me, We are the ones who go, sit down, what if, and write. Which sounds kind of cool, sounds fun, you get to experience things organically. It can also be super scary because you sit down at that blank page and you have no clue what to write some days. And you just stare, and that blinking cursor, it teases you, it taunts you, it blinks, reminding you of how long you've been sitting there with no ideas, and makes you feel like you're never gonna be able to finish this stupid story. So, on the good side though, you get to be constantly inspired. Kind of like when you are watching a TV series for the first time, you can't wait to jump into that next episode. That's how you feel writing it too. What twist am I gonna throw at my character today? It's exciting, it's fun when the words are flowing. You get to go with the flow. You're not tied to an outline. You don't have to worry about going off book. You can take that adventure down whatever road it wants to go. That can be really fun. It can also lead you to running into a wall, which we'll talk about in a second, and that dreaded word, writer's block. Now, discovering as you go is very exciting. It's very inspiring too, because just like I said with going off book for the plotters, as a pantser, you get to see what's going to happen. You don't know ahead of time. That's a lot of fun. Now, talked about writer's block before. Going on the journey sometimes leads you to running into that wall, and you may not know how to go beyond it. And unfortunately, when you are a pantser, there's gonna be a lot of extra words that you write. There's gonna be a lot of extra chapters that you write that end up being cut later on. You tend to have a first draft that looks like a hot mess when you're done, because without the direction of a plot, you're gonna just kind of spew words on a page. And that's not a bad thing. When you spew the words out and you let the creativity flow, you find all kinds of fun directions to take your characters on. But when you get to the revision stage, it's gonna mean a lot more work for you. So whether you're a pantser or a plotter, either way is fine. You need to figure out what your style is before you start writing, so that way you can be more productive with it. Now, you don't have to be hard, fast pantser or hard, fast plotter. I kind of sit in the middle. I tend to write to-do lists for my characters. So it's not a hard outline. You know, it's like milk, eggs, cheese, kill the demon. And you just check them off as you go. No specific chapter orders at all, but it helps me have a little direction without feeling tied to, I have to do this, this, or this with my story. And that's really helpful for me when I sit down and write, because I kind of know what my end goals are, and it helps me to write, especially when I get to that point where I'm staring at the blank page going, what's going on? I know where I need to go ahead of time. Now, pantsers are usually the ones that end up not finishing their novels because of writer's block. Let me tell you a little bit of secret about finishing your novel as a pantser, especially when you run into writer's block. You need to learn how to skip ahead of your story. So if you run into a wall with a story, but you know your characters are gonna go somewhere later, put a pin in it, move on, write that next scene where your characters are doing whatever it is that they're doing, and eventually you'll be able to come back and write your way backwards. Don't let running into a wall stop your forward progression in your story. Learn how to do a little hopscotch. I guarantee you when you come back later, you'll have fresh eyes. You'll be able to see new ways to connect the dots. But don't ever let yourself stop dead in your tracks. So, we know if we're a pantser, we know if we're a plotter. We've got an inspiration, we've got a story idea. How do we write it? There are three basic pillars to a story. Without them, the story doesn't stand. We need good characters, we need good setting, and we need good conflict. If we have a story that has characters and has setting but has no conflict, it's boring. If we have a story that has a setting and has conflict but no characters, well, where's the conflict? You can't have conflict without characters. It doesn't work. So you need all three of these in order to make your plot work. And this is my little cute little infographic about it. So your characters determine the direction of the plot based on how they're going to react to the conflict that you throw at them. Your setting is the playground. It's where things are happening in your story. And the conflict has to be some challenges or problems that actually mean something to your character. You put all three of those together, you get a good plot. and the order of events that happen in your story, that's the structure. That's the timeline of your plot that takes us on the journey. Let's go into one of these. So we'll do setting first. So setting, I said, is your playground. This is where your characters are going to live, it's where they're going to breathe, and you need to know it as a real world. You need to understand every aspect of it, even if you're only going to show your readers a little tiny bit of it. Now, for those of us who are going to write fantasy, we get to do world building. We get to start a whole new world for our characters to play in. For those of you who write historical fiction, you get to do a little research on the time period and the place where your character is going to exist in that historical setting. You have to know everything about it. You need to know the society. You need to know what the weather is like, what the land is like, what the buildings are like. Everything that your character is going to touch, you need to know. Which is why the iceberg makes a great analogy. Because you have to know so much about your world just to show that little tiny bit to your readers. Because that's how you're going to make it real to them. Because you know it, it will flow through in your words. So when we talk about setting, use what you know as a basis. George R. R. Martin used the map of Ireland and England, and he actually took Ireland and flipped it upside down, and that's how he got Westeros. So he took an existing map and adapted from it, which is a very smart way to do it. He also took from, Britain's History, the War of the Roses, for his family wars between each other in the Game of Thrones series. So adapting from what you know is something that most authors have done and will continue to do, so use that as your baseline. Understand the world that you want to put your characters in based on what you know of the world you already live in. Embellish from there. Know the geography. Know what the lands look like. Know if there's mountains, streams, what have you. Know exactly what the characters are going to feel when they're in the world. Same thing goes for the environment. Going back to the Game of Thrones again, George R. R. Martin used an interesting seasonal pattern with this, where winters and springs and summers aren't cyclical like they are here. Sometimes they're extremely long, and that has an effect on the characters who live within those worlds. And understanding how weather patterns are going to affect your characters or the plant and animal life is, again, another way that you're going to make this real for your readers. Understand your societies, too. Different time periods throughout history. Every society has had different hierarchies, different ways that they interact with each other. Wars between different societies have created borders. Religions create wars. The education, the political system, the class systems, everything is different in different societies and in different time periods. They've evolved over time. Use that again as your baseline. If you're writing historical fiction, or anything from history, if you're writing the, you know, Pirates on the High Seas, you need to know what that society is like and how they live. If you're creating a brand new society, look to adapt it from a society or a time period within our history that fits similarly, and then again, embellish. That way you've got a great baseline to work from, and you can make it feel real. The mythologies of different societies also help shape belief systems. And mythology is different from history in that it can't be proven whether or not it's true. These are usually handed down word of mouth, from elders to the next generations, and they usually help shape belief systems, or they talk about great heroes who've done great deeds, people that these different societies might look up to or might idolize. And that, again, shapes a belief system, shapes how people are going to interact, because two different societies with two different belief systems are going to interact differently with each other. They may not like each other because of their beliefs. They may love each other. They may have great trade relations with each other. But you have to know this, and you have to know why. And beyond mythology, history as well helps shape belief systems, helps shape the wars that have happened between different societies, helps shape the technology that they have. Whoever is in charge, the political system, whether it's a dictatorship, or maybe you have kings and queens, maybe you have a republic. These are all shaped by the history of that society, and the characters who exist within your world are going to have a place within the society. So again, you have to understand all of it, that iceberg. You have to know everything below the surface so you can fit your character into that world. Because remember, characters are one of the big pillars. Without good characters, story will not hold up. Once you've got your world all put together, what does it look like to you? Has it become something real? Have you done maps for it? Maps are a really fun exercise when it comes to not necessarily the writing process, but just kind of the world building, the prep process, especially for you plotters out there. Making maps and really visualizing the world is a very fun exercise towards creativity. So once you know what your world looks like, then you can start to people it. And you can take those people and send them on their journeys. So let's talk about characters next. Characters, we always start off with archetypes, and these are blueprints. These are not cookie cutters. These are people who fit into certain roles in the story you will develop further. And these ones are in almost every single story. So our protagonist is usually the hero, right? They're the ones that are gonna have a goal that needs to be achieved by the end of the story. Who helps them with the goal? Usually it's a sidekick of some kind. Go with the Harry Potter series, we have Ron and Hermione. If we look at The Hobbit, we have a lot of side characters in The Hobbit. Look at Lord of the Rings, we have a lot of side characters. Those side characters are just as important as the main character. They need to be developed as well as the main character. But they are there to help the hero accomplish whatever their task is. Who's going to stop the hero from accomplishing their task? That's our villain. Villains need to be fleshed out just as much as the hero. The villain and the hero should balance each other out on the scales. As good as the hero is, the villain needs to be that bad. For every good deed the hero does, the villain needs to do something just as bad. You want to make it balanced so that when they finally do have their major confrontation, it's exciting. We care about it. We want to know who's going to win the day. Now, who helps the hero? Usually with advice, suggestion, a little nudge out the door, that's the mentor. Mentors don't always go on the journey with our hero, but they are there to provide a little bit extra input that the sidekicks don't offer. So think of like Dumbledore, think of Gandalf, all of those major hero characters. And it doesn't have to be a great wizened wizard, it could be a mom, it could be a teacher, depending on your story. This is just the person who gives advice, but doesn't necessarily go on the journey. Now, on your paper, you'll have a couple more. There's a lot of different characters that we can throw in. The point is, when you create a character for your story, you need to take time to really flesh them out. You want them to be real and believable. How do we do that? If you're a pantser, you're gonna kind of create as you go. And your plotter, you're going to do the character Bible. And you'll have a little worksheet in there that'll help you with some of these questions. Now, as a pantser myself, when I write characters, I don't necessarily fill out a character bio ahead of time. But I do keep a side sheet open. And as I come up with the important details about my character, I mark it down. And that's what you want to do as well. You want to understand the basics of your character. So give them a name. Give them something that is memorable, something that is theirs. A lot of times we associate names with personalities. So if you've got a personality or a friend who has a good name, you could use their name. You can go to a website called behindthename.com and look up baby names, which is a great way to find names for your characters. They do last names as well, and it'll tell you the origin, the meaning, all that good stuff. But you want to give your characters a good name that belongs to them. That's going to be their identity throughout the story. You want to know what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. Every character is going to have something that they're good at, something they're not good at. And those strengths and weaknesses need to be played off of through the story. What do they value? What's important to them? Values can mean a lot when it comes to the villain trying to go after a main character. You know, throwing something like stealing their love away, something that they value, that's going to be a good motivator. So knowing what they value is going to be very important to how you shape your character and how they react to things that you throw at them. What do they fear? Fear is a very important tool. It can be a motivator. It can be something that stops a character from doing things. A lot of times, a villain is created out of fear. And it's that fear that turns them to the dark side and makes them overpower everything else. So use fear. Know what your characters fear. Learn about their history. What happens in the past shapes how we react to the future. Again, going back to the villains, a lot of times there's a traumatic episode in their past that has caused them to turn. You can also do the flip side. You can have them, something happened in their past that made them really want to be good. Maybe they've got somebody they really look up to and they want to be just like them. Understanding their past will help shape how they are today in your story and how they're going to react to things. Giving them a quirk just makes them unique. So you should always have something that is unique to that character. I've got a character who wears a fedora and looks ridiculous in it, but he feels good with it. He feels confident with it, so he wears it all the time. And if somebody ever talks about it, oh my God, it's like insulting to the 10th degree. He gets really butthurt about it. But that's his quirk. He feels confident as long as he's wearing that hat. So give your characters a quirk. And it doesn't have to be a physical thing. It could be a facial tic. It could be a tell. Maybe they pick their fingers when they're lying. Something that you know about that character that's just unique to them. Understanding motivations and goals will definitely help you when your characters are doing things. What is pushing them towards this end goal? If they're a sidekick, they're going to be supremely loyal to their hero. They're motivated by helping that hero get to whatever their goal is. If it's the hero, what is their goal? What's motivating them to get to that goal? By you knowing it, you're going to be able to play off of it through conflict during your story. And of course, the end goal, we always want our hero to make it to the end. So having that end goal there is very important. Make that important to them. Make it something really valuable to them. Now, once you've gotten your character Bible, you know the blueprint, you know what archetype they're going to fit into. You've interviewed them, or if you're a pantser, you've written enough chapters about them that you've kind of got a good feel for them, you've written your notes about them. Now, to make them stronger, we need to throw conflict at them. And you need to throw conflict at them that's important to them. Think about it. A relationship breaking up can be the end of the world to somebody. May not be important to somebody else, but for one character, that could be the end of their world, breaking up a relationship. The same thing with, you know, if the villain has stolen the princess and taken her off to the tower, that can be a huge motivator. So find what's important to your character, and then throw conflict in them that works against that important thing. That's going to make them react, and how they react will show you whether or not they're growing from it, or whether or not they're able to even overcome it. You also want to push characters in real danger. You're always going to be upping the stakes as your story progresses. If you don't up the stakes, it doesn't become exciting. It kind of comes flatline. We get bored with it. That's when you end up with a saggy middle, when you've got nothing exciting going on. So you want to constantly throw new challenges at your characters and put them in real danger. Make your readers feel something for the characters by putting them in danger. Also, give them a relationship that's outside of the story goal so you can see normal versus on the journey. You want to show the different sides of them because that's going to help show that character's growth over time. Now, in your papers there, you'll also see a little bit about character archetypes. Through your story, your character should change in some way. After you've thrown a lot of conflict at them, have they grown? There's different archetypes that we have most stories follow. You have your hero's journey, which is a transformative, becoming a hero. You have your spiritual growth. You have your mental growth. And those have tragedy. Not all characters will make it to the end of a story. Not all characters will overcome all of these challenges. If you're throwing real and important challenges at your character, not all of them are going to make it to the end. And tragedy is a valid arc for some characters. So keep that in mind as you're building these characters. Not all the ones make it. And it's not always the villain, too. A lot of the mentors tend to not make it to the end as well. So, I'm going to go over this one really quickly. There's a term that's thrown around, kind of derogatory, genre fiction, literary fiction. The difference really on those two is whether or not a story is plot-driven or character-driven. A plot-driven story is one that is action-packed, but doesn't necessarily have enough character development. And it's the action that's holding the story. That's what's making you care. There's just so much less you. There's so much action happening that you're just following along. You're there for the ride. Versus a more character-driven story, which is, why is the character making these choices for every action that's thrown at them? Does that make sense? So it's more of a developmental issue. And actually, stories should have elements of both. You should have a lot of action that should make your characters react. But you should also know why the characters are reacting. And that's the important thing to know here. If you're developing your characters enough, the reasons for them reacting to the conflict that you throw at them should be there. And just as a quick exercise, The Hobbit, which is one of my favorites, is that a plot-driven or a character-driven story? you could argue both ways. You could say it's plot driven, because there's a lot of action and adventure that he goes on the way to help the new dwarves get their kingdom back. However, if you look at the reasons behind why he went, it becomes more of a character-driven story, because Gandalf was the catalyst. He recognized that Bilbo had lost that adventurous regional spirit and needed to get it back, and the only way to do that was to challenge him. And through all the challenges he faced, he became a better person. And when he returned home, he was a lot wiser, and he had that youthful adventurous spirit as part of him. So, and that's one of the reasons this stands the test of time, is because it uses both. So when you're writing, make sure you're doing the same thing. Don't just throw action for action's sake at them. Your conflict needs to have some purpose, and your characters reacting to that should be clear to the reader. Now, conflict. Conflict is the third pillar. That's the important one. Once we've got our characters and we've got our setting, we need to make it exciting. We need to throw conflict at them. And there are seven different types of conflict we can throw at them. And we can do it in layers. You're not just going to throw one conflict at them. You're going to throw multiple conflicts over time at them. So, let's look at person versus self. I am my own worst enemy. Every choice I make screws me over. That's the type of conflict. We all make bad decisions. It can be on a large scale, or it can be on a small scale. But that's a type of conflict that you can use on the individual characters. Person versus person, so that's me versus you. We're just at odds for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to be fist fights. It could be two lovers breaking up. That's a conflict. And how are characters reacting to that? Person versus nature. You're gonna see this as a primary as well as a sub-conflict. Look at your survival stories. Look at Hunger Games. The arena is a person versus nature conflict. Now, it's not the primary conflict. It's one of the conflicts in the story, but it's a pretty prevalent one. Person versus society. Hunger Games again. Rising up against an oppressive society. Rising up against maybe a clique, a social clique. It doesn't have to be a giant thing. It can be a small thing. But you're going to throw these conflicts in layers at your character throughout the story. Person versus technology. It's one of my favorites. So it can be the Terminators coming after you. Or it can be as simple as, damn it, my iPhone's broken. So it doesn't have to be huge. It can be something small. But you're going to throw these in layers. Person versus the fates or God. Sometimes we make decisions based on our beliefs, and maybe they're the wrong decisions. Person versus the supernatural. Any supernatural elements. You've got your poltergeist. You've got your scary story. A lot of your horror stories will fall into this realm here. Dragons, werewolves, what have you, all of the supernatural elements, that's a conflict. And again, you're going to use all of these in different layers throughout your story, but it has to be meaningful conflict. It's got to be something your characters care about in order for your readers to care about them. Now, when we talk about plot again, going back to the big word of plot, which is kind of an all-encompassing word, the general theme of the story is going to be one primary conflict. Not the only conflict in the story, but it's going to be one that you can sum up. We're going to save the kingdom. We're going to save the princess. We're going to solve a murder. One primary conflict. This is going to give you the overall theme of your story, and you're going to work your conflict in layers after that. So, we talked about the three pillars, and now we get to the plot. The plot and the structure of your plot is the order of these exciting events that play all three of these against each other. Now, three-act structure, depending on whether or not you're talking about playwriting versus writing in a book, sometimes it's a five-act structure. What that refers to is usually the five elements within the structure. The Freytag's pyramid is pretty much what we use to define the order of events and the rising action in a story. So within these three acts here, we're gonna have our introduction. We're gonna have some rising action. That's all those little conflicts as we go up to the top. We're gonna have our climax. Now, a lot of people are confused about climax. Climax is not the big battle that they win. Climax is the point of most excitement, most stress. Usually, this is whether you're questioning if that hero is gonna make their goal. And it usually involves kind of a big defeat, and then they have to regroup after that. So the climax is the point of most tension and excitement within a story. And then we have our falling action. We have a regrouping, getting the troops ready again, and we get into our resolution. We either win the day or we don't. And then from there, there's usually a calm down. But free tax pyramid is a typical way that we structure our stories. More modern times, and I blame the Netflix generation here, people don't necessarily like the long introduction, and they kind of skip over that. They want stories to start in media res, which is in the middle of things. And so we have the 15 curve, which starts us right at the point of first action and gives us lots of little conflicts, the little resolutions, as we get up to that climactic moment. Now, because we cut off the introduction does not mean we stop the character development. It doesn't mean that we give up on that. You still have to develop your characters and give the backstory, but you have to do it in small chunks as they're going through these little bits of conflict on our way up to the climax. But again, it still includes the rising action. We still have our climax, we still have our falling action, we still have a resolution. It just cuts off the boring introduction part. There and back again, otherwise known as The Hobbit. This one is more cyclical, but it still follows the same pattern. We still have some kind of inciting incident that causes our hero to go on a journey. Through this, they're going to be challenged. The challenges are going to cause them to learn things. So there's still conflicts. There's still little bits of conflict and resolution as we're going around. The only difference with the hero's journey is we come back home, usually wiser, usually smarter, sometimes as the king, sometimes as the mentor to the next generation in that story if you're a series writer. A lot of times the mentors in your story are usually somebody who's talking from experience. They've been there, done that. They were a previous hero in their own story. But all of them include the same basic structure elements. So our exposition, that's our introduction. That's where we talk about the character. We give you a little snapshot of what their life is like, their normal life before the change happens. We get to a rising action. There's some point of conflict that causes our hero to do something, to make a decision, to go after whatever their goal is in your story. Now, as they go for that, they're going to have lots of little conflicts that are going to build up. We're going to increase the tension until we get to that point of greatest tension. That's our climax. Again, that's not the great battle. That's usually the battle where they lose and have to find a way to regroup. They got to dig deep after that in order to continue. Then we get to our falling action. That is the regrouping. That's for finding a new way around to defeat our villain, to get our goal. Once they've achieved their goal, we get to our resolution, happy ending, or happy for now, depending on if you're a series writer. So while the plot is our conflict, the structure is our order, and that takes us on the journey. The story altogether is the journey we take with the character. Now, within these different plot themes we talked about, there are a lot of basic ones, and your sheet will have a few more than I have listed here. I wanted to use this just to give you the primary ones most people are familiar with. So we have like an overcoming the monster. Remember, plot theme is one big conflict that we're going to overcome. Rags to riches. Everybody knows Cinderella? That's your classic rags to riches story. A character goes from nothing, gets a taste of the high life, loses it, and then has to get it back again somehow. The hero's journey, that's the classic, that's the there and back again. The hero is growing and changing and learning and coming back smarter. Rebirth, some kind of a change, whether it's a physical change or mental change within a character. Underdog, which is one of my favorites, or the sports heist or contest. Who here likes Pitch Perfect? Guilty pleasure, that is a classic. That is one where you have a character who has a unique ability. Something special about them, but they need to incorporate within a group in order to use that ability. And that group also needs them, but the group dynamic doesn't get along, and so they have to learn how to work together in order to win the contest, save the day, whatever. Ocean's 11 is another one of those. It's usually a nice team building exercise. Those are a lot of fun. So you have more in your packet there. And there's a few examples of those types, but I want to break down some of the more familiar ones to you so you see how these elements all fit together. So we're going to look at the hero's journey because that's the one everybody knows. So the beats that you're going to see here are going to be in yellow, and we're going to go a little bit more in depth into beats in a second. But I want you to get how it all fits together. So for the hero's journey, we have a protagonist who's going to go to a strange land. He's going to go on a journey, and after overcoming whatever threats that's posed to them, they return with experience. So in our intro, we have humble beginnings. We see them, usually a mentor presents the challenge that throws them into this quest. They're going to learn something about themselves, or they're going to learn some skill that's going to help them overcome whatever monsters and challenges that they have. They'll defeat the villain, and they will come back home as a leader using what they've learned. How does that apply to the stories we know? Let's look at Star Wars. Everybody familiar with Star Wars? Yes? Okay. It's old enough, everybody should be familiar with it. So how does that apply? Okay, well, our theme here, we've got a rebellion fighting against an evil empire. All right, so it's kind of like an overcoming the monster as well as the hero's journey. So we're introduced to Luke, a simple farm boy, unhappy with his life, right? But he's not willing to make a change to that. Even though he dreams of going off, he doesn't do it. So we need a catalyst. So we have the droids show up. We have Obi-Wan into the picture. He offers to take him, but Luke won't go until he sees his guardians killed. That's our catalyst. That starts our rising action. So Obi-Wan takes him. They're going to go off, and they hire Han Solo. And they're going to go off and return the droids back to the owners, the rebels. All right, so we get to our climax. Well, the droids can't be returned back. Alderaan's destroyed. Princess is locked up in the Death Star. What do we do now? So we've got a lot of what-ifs here. The journey has changed. Luke's learning how to be a Jedi, but his mentor dies, doesn't make it to the end. He's forced to move on. So he's still got to finish the mission. He's still got to dig deep and finish the mission. Even though they complete the side quest of rescuing the princess, they still have to destroy the Death Star. So he makes the choice. He says, I'm going to join the rebels, and he goes on to destroy the Death Star. Instead of returning home, this is the twist with this one, he joins the Rebel Alliance because he doesn't have a home anymore. So that's how the hero's journey fits in beat-wise. Let's take a look at another famous one, Rags to Riches. We all know the Cinderella story. It has pretty standard beats as well. So we start off with a character at the bottom of social hierarchy, or familial hierarchy too, with no options to change this. There's usually a wicked oppressor. In this case, it's going to be the wicked stepmother. And by luck, magic, or some choice, their situation changes. So they rise quickly to find their success, only to have it stripped away the moment they get it. Once they've had it stripped away, they have to dig deep and reclaim their success in some way. So how does that apply to Cinderella? Well, let's look at the theme. So we've got from slave to princess with the right attitude and shoes, because that's important. So after her father's death, what is she left with? A wicked stepmother and two stepsisters who basically turned her into a servant in her own home. So we've got the familial hierarchy. She's at the bottom rung. She's being kept down by the wicked oppressor. So check, check, check there. Her only way out of this is a stable marriage. In that society, in that time period, that was it. You know, husband had everything, and if you got a good marriage, then you moved up. So she has no way of getting this right now. Stepmother's preventing her from going to the ball. She has no way to do it. By magic, remember luck, magic, or choice. By magic, fairy godmother grants her wish. Gives her a ball gown, some nice shoes, sends her off to the ball where she immediately catches the eye of the prince. So an immediate rise to power. She's got it all. Only clock strikes 12. She's got to go. She drops a shoe on the way out. She's back to the life of a slave. But because she's a good-hearted person, she keeps a smile on her face. That's her digging deep. Smiling despite the fact that her life sucks. And she's rewarded by being able to marry the prince. He finds the shoe and takes it around. Obviously, we know the story. Although I think the Hans Christian Andersen stories and the Grimm stories, they have a better version of it. I like the payback she gives to him. But the Disney version, she's a good person, and she's rewarded for being a good person. She doesn't make people dance until they're complete. Okay, hold on. Some of the old stories are the thing. I really, really enjoy some of the old ones. They're evil. All right, so you notice a lot of those things were in yellow. So we're going to talk about plot beats. So I gave you the five basic components of plot structure, but you can actually break it down into further bite-sized pieces. And especially for you plotters who are looking to create your outline, this is a great way of making sure that outline is easy to follow. Now for you pantsers, that doesn't mean you don't get to use this. This is a great way to use as a checklist when you're done to see if you hit standard points. Make sure that you're on the path towards writing your story the way people expect it to be delivered. So we're gonna go through these
One step at a time.
So, act one, we open with our introduction, right? And we get a small beat, our opening image. So if we're looking at, let's do Star Wars again, for example, because everybody knows Star Wars. So what's our opening image of Star Wars? It's an iconic image. What do we see?
The text.
We got the text, but beyond that, we've got the big ship coming across. We know it's an epic space opera. So we see the big ship coming in. We immediately are shown that there is a fight going on between the tiny little rebel ship and the big, giant, oppressive, Empire. The Empire, thank you. So that's our opening image. And then we quick cut over to Luke, simple farm boy. He's our hero, right? This simple farm boy starting off in a position where he doesn't want to be but can't change his position. All right, so our story theme is revealed. We know this is going to be an epic battle between the Empire and the Rebels, and it's going to take the ragtag band to do it. Now, we set up the journey. So we've got the droids come down, and Luke's family ends up picking them up. And the droid, what happens? He shows off that help me Obi-Wan Kenobi message that sends them spiraling into the conflict. We get into our rising action. There's a debate. Once they go to Obi-Wan, he's like, we need help. We gotta send these droids back where they belong. Luke's like, I don't wanna go. He's questioning. He wants to. He really wants to go, but he's questioning it. He's got the opportunity, but he won't make it. So we need a catalyst. What's the catalyst? Seeing his family dead. Now he has no choice. Now he has to go. So we move into Act Two. Rising action continues into Act Two. So we break into Act Two, and that's the choice. That's us seeing the choice. They're now hiring Han Solo and Chewie. They're going to get on that ship, and they're going to go return the droids to the rebels. They're heading off to Alderaan. We get the promise of the premise here. So our story goal is going to be a little bit harder than we expected. So we know we got to return the droids, but what happens? We get to Alderaan. Oops, it's gone. Okay, so we can't just return the droids to Alderaan. What do? Oh, look at the moon. That's not a moon. What is it? It's the Death Star. So we've got a little bit more complication now than we originally thought. So we get to our B story. Our B story is usually a side story, kind of shows a little more character development. In this case, we get Han picking on Luke about the Force, hokey religions and all that. We also get the Rescue the Princess side story. Once they get onto the Death Star, they realize that the droid belongs to the princess and she's locked up here. Well, let's go save her. We get to our climax. We rescue the princess, but the escape isn't happening like we thought, and Obi-Wan's now fighting with Darth Vader. This is not going how we expected, right? We get to our midpoint, the twist, the kink in the plan. Obi-Wan does not survive. He sacrifices himself so they can get out, which is very, very bad. Now we're feeling sad. We got out, but we didn't all make it out, and we still haven't won anything. We still have to finish our mission, which is to get the droids back to the rebels. So the enemies are everywhere. Fighting's happening. Nothing's going the way we want it to. We get to that low point. All is lost. Are we going to make it? Should we continue? Well, we have to dig deep, okay? So we make a choice. We're going to return these droids. Droids get the plans back to the rebels, and they've got a new plan. We're going to reassemble the troops. We're digging deep now. We're going to start over. We're going to defeat this Death Star. We've got the plans. We're reassembling the troops. He has to make a choice. He's going to go fight. Meanwhile, Han speaks out of it. And we get to our finale. That is our epic battle. That's where we see them do that strafing run down, and Luke makes that great shot. There's our finale. And we all get to celebrate at the end. So that's how we break our story into little bite-sized bits and pieces. And if you're outlining, if you're using this ahead of time, you've got a great little to-do list now of things you want to put in your story. You've got a lot of good direction. Now, for the pantsers out there, you do this after as kind of a checklist. Did I fit all of these in the right order? If yes, great. If no, where can I go in and revise? So you can use a beat sheet on either side of it. What I like to call it is kind of mission-driven scene creation. So for, again, you plotters, you get to put everything in ahead of time and you get excited about it, but you're not doing the big, crazy plot outline yet. If you want to turn it into an outline, well, you expand those viewpoints. Turn that one sentence into a paragraph, or two, or three, and then you've got the basis of your outline. For the pantsers, again, like I said, you just go and do your checklist on the end. Did I hit that? Did I hit that? Did I hit that? Did it work? If yes, great. If not, revise as necessary. So it gives you a way to kind of check and balance yourself. And you can use it or you don't have to. It's a tool. It's something to help you along in the writing process. Now, with all that said, we started by saying writing is just as easy as sitting down and writing, right? Obviously, that's not the case. Writing is complicated, and it takes a lot of dedication. And beyond that, it also takes the ability to make it through that first draft, which is the hardest thing to do for some of us, because a lot of times we are perfectionists. Now, I have a mantra that I say when I write my first drafts, and that is, first drafts are supposed to suck. Who's going to read that first draft? Just you. You're the only person that's going to read it. So if that first draft is a hot mess, it's okay. The thing to remember is when you write, you can edit, but you can't edit what you haven't written. So as long as you're getting your story moving forward and getting from the beginning to the end, you're doing good. Doesn't matter how crappy it looks at the end. It's supposed to be a hot mess, because then you can revise it, then you can make it better. But if you don't get from point A to point B, you're never gonna finish. I've known people who have started and they get to, let's say, chapter 5. Like, I just didn't like chapter 5. I'm just gonna rewrite it. A couple months later, still on chapter 5. They've not moved forward because they're trying to perfect chapter 5 so much that they can't move beyond it. Let chapter 5 be a hot mess. Get to chapter 6, chapter 7, and then when you're done, go back and fix it. It's gonna be bad, but you're the only one who gets to read it. So you're not gonna be embarrassed by it. When you finally get to the point where you've revised it enough to let other people read it, you're gonna be on draft 12, maybe. So don't worry about the first draft. Silence the editor. Write the book. Don't worry about writing quality. Again, you're the only one who's gonna read this. Don't be embarrassed about it. Voice and style. A lot of times when I write my first drafts, it's purely dialogue. I don't see the characters until after I've written it all. So a lot of times it's like screenplay style when I write a first draft. And it's just running dialogue from all the chapters. And then when I go back for my first revision, then I have to concentrate and see the characters speaking within their space and add in all those details. But I don't do it all at the same time. And that's a style I had to learn to develop, because I was initially one of those, it has to be perfect, I have to write everything in the first draft. It wasn't until I calmed down and said, you know what, I'm just gonna write what happens and I'll come back later and fix it, that I was able to speed up my writing and to write more. Don't worry about any of the minute details and descriptions. You're gonna give the creative flair on your next revision. Get the story down. Finish the first draft first. And then also, for you plotters, if your outline is confining you and you feel like you're struggling to get your story written, go off book. Allow yourself to go beyond that outline. Don't feel like you have to be a slave to your outline to get your story written. Sometimes going off book and taking a different journey gives you more excitement, and you'll see your characters doing something you didn't expect them to do, and that can make your story better overall. Now, a lot of us are afraid. We're scared of people not liking our story. We're scared of people thinking our writing is juvenile. If you don't at least hate your story at some point in the process, you're doing something wrong. I mean, we are our worst critics, and we will find every problem that's not there. So don't worry about whether or not your story is good enough, especially when you're trying to write that first draft, because that's going to stop you. If somebody can make money off of Sharknado, your story's fine. Don't worry about it. Do not be afraid of it. The drive to create. It's about acknowledging your fear and saying, screw it, I'm doing it anyways. And how do you do that? You write for yourself first. You write the story you would want to read, because right now you're the only one reading it. So if you don't like it, make it something you like. And if you don't like it because you think other people are just going to hate it, that's normal. We all hate our work. Usually by the time you're ready to share it with other people, that's when you're biting all of your nails off and you're waiting for somebody to tell you something about your story and give you feedback. And we all have the demons, you know, whispering in our head, we're not good enough, this is stupid, they're not going to like it. 9 times out of 10, when people come back and say, awesome, good job. Beyond that, pat yourself on the back for finishing a story. Because again, it's not as simple as just sit down and write. There's a lot that goes into it. A lot more than most people think, and it takes dedication. So if you get to that point where you have finished your first draft, pat yourself on the back. Don't worry about the stress and the fear of what other people think. Enjoy the fact that you made it. Also, if you get to a point where you are just stressing out about your story, stop. Don't stop writing in general, but give yourself a chance to just free write. Don't hold yourself to an outline. Just write whatever comes to mind. Free writing engages your creativity. It lets you see things in a new light. And it's a great exercise in just finding what else is out there. And sometimes when you get stuck, when you hit that writer's block and you don't know where to go, if you free write about some element of your story, it'll help you figure out where you went wrong or how to avoid that blockage. And it can even be something as simple as, if you're a pantser and you never wrote your character's Bible, do that, interview your character. It doesn't have to be words that go into your story, it just has to be something to help engage that creativity and get you back on the right path, so you're not stressing out about it so much. Now, time for the big one, our secrets for success on writing a first draft. First one, set aside time. Writing requires dedication. In order to be dedicated, you have to set time aside to do that thing, right? Think of it like a job. We clock in and out for our jobs. We go to our jobs every day. Not just because we have the paycheck, but because we're dead, right? Just go with it. All right. So the same thing applies to writing. Treat it like a job, not the bad part. Clock in and clock out. Give yourself a set time to do your writing. Because when you set time and you make it important, you will do it. Now, for me, I tend to set between 8 o'clock and whenever I fall asleep at the keyboard as my time to write, because I'm a mom. I have 3 kids. During the day, it is all mom duty. It's all family, it's all taking care of the kids. I can't write when I can't hear myself think, and with 3 kids, my house is way too loud for me to actually hear myself think. So usually about 8 o'clock, I'm militant. I'm like, that's it, bedtime. We don't talk to mommy at this point. And my oldest, she understands that she doesn't bother me too much. My littles, once they go to bed, it's like, hugs and kisses are done. Mommy doesn't exist anymore. And I set that time every night to write. And that's become my habit. Once you set it as a habit and you do it often enough, you want to do it. You get to that point where it's not just a, I have to do it, I want to do it. So set yourself time that is strictly for writing. This is your time. Then focus on small goals. So another thing that I like to do with my writing goals is to set myself a word count. Now, you don't have to use word count, but it's an easy goal to work with, because if you're at the bottom of the screen, it tells you how many words you're at. It's super easy to go with. Now, you can do 500 words, or you can do 1,000 words, whatever you're comfortable with. It needs to be a small goal. The reason we choose small goals is when you achieve a goal, you get that little dopamine release in your brain, you feel happy, you feel accomplished and excited, and that reinforces the fact that you set up that time to do it. Now you've also got your little dopamine happy release. I did it, look at what's good here. And if you set, let's say, 1,000 words a day as your goal, average novel length is 80,000 words for genre fiction. So in less than 3 months, if you set that goal every single day, you've completed a novel. You look back and go, that was not long, and look what I've written. So you've got an extra dose of happy, because those little goals add up so quickly you don't even notice them. And then when you turn around, you're like, look what I did. I did this thing. It's amazing. So you get that extra release of happy. So give yourself small, achievable goals so you'll feel good about them. And as you set yourself time for it, it becomes not just a habit of have to do it. It becomes a, I want to do this every day. I want to hit my next goal. Allow for creativity gaps. Now, I said it before, when you run into the wall and you don't know where to go, don't feel like you have to stick to chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Give yourself time, put a pin in it, jump ahead to a scene where maybe you can figure out what's going on with the characters, and come back later. Allowing yourself to hop over and continue writing moves the progression forward. You don't stop yourself from writing. You give yourself a little bit of time to breathe, reassess the situation. When you come back, you'll find a way to tie it together. I always stress about it, but I do it. And when I started, I was one of those slaves to chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I ran into spots where it took me forever to get past chapters where I hit the wall. Once I learned it was okay to hop over and come back later, I started writing a lot faster. And I can produce usually 3 books a year on an average pace without stressing too much about it. Because again, remember, less than 3 months, you can have a book written. So in 12 months, that's easy. But again, it's the small goals. It's the setting aside time, treating it like it's important. Also, silence the editor. Remember, first drafts are supposed to suck. You're the only one reading them. So don't worry about what they look like, what they sound like. You're gonna go back and revise it. The first thing you write is not gonna be what is produced into a book. It's gonna be 12 or 13 drafts before you get there. You're gonna revise it to the point where you hate looking at those words before it's ready to go out into the world. So let that first draft suck. Silence the editor and let yourself just spew the words on the page. This one comes from a friend of mine. Prepare your writing space ahead of time. I am super guilty of this. So I said 8 o'clock is my writing time, right? Oh, I gotta get my tea, I gotta set my music. Got all these little things that I have to do to get in the zone for writing. Set these up ahead of time. If you treat writing like something that needs to be done and you have a limited time frame to do it, then you need to be ready to write during that time. So during the day, you're thinking about what you want to write. Before 8 o'clock comes, I need to have my tea. I need to have my music playlist on. So that at 8 o'clock, I'm clocking in for writing time. Do that and you will find your time being a lot more productive. There's a tool that I've used, more as a training tool, and this is only if you don't have anxiety and you're okay with your computer screwing with you. It's called Write or Die. And when I wanted to learn to write faster and to silence that editor and just let words flow, I started using this. What it is it's online, it's all free. You go in, you set a time limit. So let's say 30 minutes is my time limit. And you tell it how mean you want it to be to you. Anytime you stop writing, it starts messing with you. It could be deleting words. It could be flashing on your screen. It could be making like siren sounds at you, but it's gonna shock you to let you know that you are wasting time. And again, if you don't have anxiety, use this. If you have any kind of anxiety, don't do it. Because it will really mess with you. But it does train you to just shut the editor off and write whatever comes to mind. It's okay to have a hot mess on the page. You have 1,000 words of hot mess that you wrote. So you hit your goal. And I use that to help train me to write. But you can do it yourself without having to be so mean. But make sure that when you clock in for writing time, you're ready to write right then and there. And that's it. Anybody have any questions? Did we cover it all? I see deer in the headlights out here. Anything that we didn't cover that you might be interested in? All right. All right, well, thank you guys.
I thought that was awesome, Katie.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Facebook.